an adventurous soul turned global con man, Gregor MacGregor spent most of his life swindling and ultimately killing hundreds of people. Stay tuned to hear how Gregor MacGregor spent his entire life scamming militaries, financial institutions, and even royalty. I'm Courtney Green.
I'm Katie Reeves.
And I'm Ezra Coopersmith. And this is Swindled and Psyched, the podcast where we explore some of the most successful scammers and hustlers in history, talk about why they worked, how they're still working, and what you can do to make sure you don't fall for them.
This podcast is brought to you by Better Business Bureau, Great West and Pacific. The BBB has helped consumers find trustworthy businesses for over 100 years. With resources like Scam Tracker and online business records, finding trust in the marketplace is easier than ever. Visit BBB.org for more information. The opinions expressed on this podcast are our own and do not represent the opinions of Better Business Bureau, Great West and Pacific.
This is easily one of the best cons I have ever heard of, and we have researched so many. It's also one of the most intricate. And the longest running, as far as I'm concerned. It's just absolutely amazing. I know a lot of people probably already know Gregor MacGregor. He was honestly one of the most successful con men in a kind of a scary way. But the fact that in the time period, he could pretty much get away with anything, which we see a lot in the early 1800s early 1800s to late 1800s, you'll see when we cover stories, it's just in our minds, because we're from, you know, probably most of our listeners are born from, you know, 2000 before. I don't know. We're probably hitting a good demographic of 20-year-olds to 35-year-olds. But it's just hard to process that people could get away with things like they could back then.
I mean, I hate to be here comes Debbie Downer or whatever that is. But, you know, it's one of those where you look at absolutely could people get away with more back then? 100%. I mean, it still happens just because 'tis the way of the world. But this is absolutely probably my favorite story so far. Just because,
I mean,
again,
we're only in season one.
I know, but we've looked at a bunch of different stories, and this one just sticks out because it's just wild. Like, the whole thing is just, yeah.
I'm just, with all of these, I'm continually amazed by the confidence that people can have.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I know.
I've been told, I guess this is a bit of a humble brag, but I'm really bad at lying. Like, even if I'm trying to tell a joke that involves, like, telling a white lie, I give it away. And so the idea that you could walk around pretending to be nobility or, like, a titan of some industry and just completely be making it up, that's amazing to me.
Oh, yeah.
I think our brains just don't work that way as well, I think. Because I'm the same way. I read, you know, look at these stories and I think, wow, man, just consequences be damned, or just
seriously,
who cares? Or if, you know, or just he was so convincing that, yes, I am this person.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, anyway, I'll stop rambling.
It's just, this is one of probably the longest stories we'll go through. So make sure you have the time to dedicate to this story, because it is worth every second, let me tell you. I'm going to dive in now then, since I just explained to you that it's going to be forever. This is the story that never ends, let me tell you.
Dee, 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 dee.
Sorry. You had to. I set you up for that. So Gregor MacGregor was said to be born into high nobility, Scottish nobility, that is, in 1786. His ancestors were known adventurers, known mostly for discovering Scotland's doomed colony in the Darren Gap. While the stories of Gregor McGregor's childhood, we're never really told the same way twice. We do know that when McGregor was 16 in 1803, he decided to seek adventure of his own by joining the British Army. Unfortunately, 1803 was the year that the Napoleonic Wars broke out, making McGregor immediately needed for duty, which perhaps was the adventure McGregor was looking for, though the French never invaded the little island he was stationed on. Even though the war ended up being a wash for his adventurous soul, he did meet his first wife, Maria Bowater, on that assignment. Lucky for McGregor, not only did Maria come from a family with a good name, but they also were filthy rich. Much to the horror of Maria's family, McGregor quickly charmed his way into getting her to marry him. Not long after they were married, McGregor started using his wife's money to buy the rank captain. After several years serving in Spain, McGregor still hadn't seen any battle, therefore none of really the adventure he was looking for. Then in 1809, right when McGregor was about to leave the army and return to Scotland, excitement arrived. McGregor was sent to Portugal to fight Napoleon's forces. Later that year, he sold his rank as captain and joined the Portuguese army instead. Only lasting about a year, he resigned from the Portuguese army. In 1810, McGregor returned to his homeland of Scotland, feeling unfulfilled and full of lackluster. Though that's not what he told his friends and family. Once he returned home, he claimed he had fought so valiantly that he was knighted and now called Sir McGregor. While this was just a tiny lie, the fact that not a single person, family, friends, or townspeople questioned the lie showed McGregor that he could get away with telling people anything. 2 years later, in 1812, McGregor found himself in Venezuela after the death of his wife and being cut off by his in-laws. He was looking for another adventure and hoped he would find it there due to the recent politics in the area. So this is when Venezuela had seceded from Spain, starting a war. Guess what McGregor did then? He joined the military and got married. His two favorite things. After several years serving the army, fighting in several battles, and even being left on an island by his own men, he led his troops to safety. After that, soldiers and Venezuelan government welcomed him back as a hero. Pittsburgh, in what is now the United States, then caught wind of the incredible things McGregor was doing and needed help infiltrating Spanish Florida. Anyone who would join his army was promised huge estates on Florida. In 1817, he set sail for an island off of the United States coast. The only problem, McGregor didn't own the land that he was giving his army. Once the men landed on the army, the people who inhabited it surrendered and McGregor settled to enjoy his first major swindle. He started paying his troops in fake currency. Once the troops had figured out the con, McGregor had taken the ship and sailed away with what was left of their money, food, and left the troops to their fate. Following the Florida failure, McGregor sailed back to Britain. So this is 1818 at this point. He hired 500 more men and then tried to conquer Panama. He took the city of Portobello and went back to lounging on the beach and drinking, which, again, two of his other favorite things. Quickly, he was counterattacked again and left his men to their fates. Even though many were starting to question McGregor, his name carried enough shine for one last group of men to follow him on an invasion. In October of 1819, McGregor landed on the coast of Venezuela. Just as the others had gone, McGregor took the city, got drunk instead of defending the land, and when things went south, he stole ships and left his men behind. This time, though, the fate of the men he left behind was particularly savage. After the Spanish took their city back, McGregor's men were lined up in the streets and shot dead. After his third and giant failure at conquering new land, McGregor no longer had the following of big names in politics and military. The leaders went as far as to tell people to kill McGregor on sight if they were to see him. Even though McGregor's military career was over, he wasn't done with his schemes. He then came up with a con that would go down in history as one of the most successful and horrible cons of all time. Along the coast of modern-day Nicaragua and Honduras is a place called Mosquito Shore. This place is just as horrible as it sounds. From countless bugs to swamp and jungle terrain, it's an unlivable area. And I bet all of our listeners know what's about to happen next, but... In April of 1820, MacGregor hopped off a boat and into the forests of this tropical hell, where he hoped to get lost forever. Not only did Venezuelan leaders want him dead, but the Spanish, Americans, and all of the families of the men he betrayed wanted his head. While hiding on Mosquito Shore, he came into contact with a tribal leader who called himself King George Frederick Augustus. Naturally, MacGregor got him drunk and partied on the beach with him. But once the three-day bender was over, MacGregor somehow emerged with a signed deed that handed him over the rights to 8 million acres of that land. So here's where it gets good. That land that MacGregor now owned was renamed Poyais by MacGregor. And then when he arrived back in Britain, there was a coronation happening for George the Fourth. So there were so many parties and so many royalty coming in for those parties that no one noticed when MacGregor snuck back in as a rich guy from a fake country. So MacGregor was getting away with all of this craziness because of the time period. There were so many new countries popping up or seceding or being conquered that it was honestly just really hard to keep up. Especially since he wrote a book under a fake name about the climate, history, geography, and livability of Poyais and published it to show people and to kind of solidify his story. So once folks started to believe this place existed, MacGregor went back to Scotland to convince common folk, banks, businessmen, and government military leaders that they could be a part of this big, or they could be big global players in this if they migrated to this prosperous land. All they had to do was buy it from him piece by piece. By 1822, the first ship from Britain had left to the new land, and MacGregor asked British banks to pay out Poyais bonds. Without batting an eye, they handed over £200,000, which is nearly $4 million in today's money. Using that money, MacGregor opened Poyais consulates all over Britain to falsify legitimacy. Quickly, investments in Poyais bonds had generated over £1 billion in today's money. The second boat of new landowners departed in January of 1823. Once the first ship reached the shores of Poyais, they dressed in their best and shot off a gun at shore, hoping someone would lead them to the capital. But when they realized there wasn't anyone coming, they wondered if the ship's navigation had erred or had an error. They unloaded all their things onto the deserted beach and sent the captain looking for Poyais. Sadly, those who invested in the scheme were either old folks looking for an easy place to retire or young families looking for a place to grow and prosper. A group really not properly prepared for this terrible, harsh climate. When the second boat arrived several months later, that boat just kind of assumed navigation was off as well, even though the captain of the first ship returned saying they never found Poyais. The 200 settlers now stranded on the island were hit with a hurricane that blew away their supplies, rain that left them harshly soaked, followed by mosquitoes that nearly ate them alive. Though I'm sure they probably would have preferred being eaten alive than to have gotten the deadly diseases that infected them after the mosquitoes left. Of the 200 settlers left on the fake land of Poyais, only a third of them survived the tropical diseases, mainly malaria. The only reason the group lived is because a ship from British Honduras just so happened to sail by and alert the colonial authorities. In 1823, the Royal Navy was busy saving the settlers and intercepting five more ships from dropping people off on Poyais. If that ship hadn't passed by, it's estimated that the death toll would have been over 1,000 people. Understandably, when news broke in Britain in October 1823, people started to look for MacGregor. Of course, he'd fled and taken as much money as he possibly could. Any sane person would have taken the cash, run, and been done with the scheme. However, McGregor wouldn't be done with the Poirier scheme for another 15 years. People just couldn't comprehend for some reason that Poirier wasn't real, so he was able to keep this scheme going. After his second wife died in 1828, McGregor went back to Venezuela. Now, if you remember, Venezuelan government told people to kill him on sight. If you were hoping that was how that story ended, I'm about to crush your dreams. There's more. Like I said, it's kind of the story that never ends. The government officials that had originally wanted his head had died several years earlier while McGregor was collecting hundreds of thousands of pounds from innocent people and banks. So when McGregor returned, no one really cared about that random Scotsman. In fact, some of the new government officials had been part of McGregor's troop when he got really lucky and saved a lot of them. So when they heard he'd returned, they reinstated his rank, paid him 25 years of back pay and a generous pension. He lived out his days wealthy, respected, and loved by all. He died in 1845 without ever getting in trouble for his schemes.
And scene.
Wow. I have to say, I am like, I'm always blown away. I've read this story 100 times, but I'm always blown away that he got away with it and he was rewarded at the end for it.
I know. Not even that he fled, he lived out his days in isolation or whatever. Nope. Welcomed back in. Some old, former military troops, and there you go. Oh, hey, here's 25 years of back pay.
For me, the thing that, because I hadn't heard this story. I mean, I had an idea of who this guy was, but I had not heard the whole story. But the first warning signs for me were when he kept going back to war and like joining mm-hmm. the Navy, the British Navy, and then the Portuguese military in the 1800s.
Yep.
And my first thoughts
were just... And the Spanish military.
Yeah, and then the Spanish
anyone.
Military.
Anyone.
This guy
traitor,
does
traitor,
not
traitor,
care.
Traitor, traitor,
like, this is... There are risk-averse people
no
in the
loyalty.
World, and he is not one of them. Like, guy will risk anything
do
what he wants.
Yeah, he'll do what he wants, and he doesn't really care about how he makes other people feel, how his actions affect other people. It's just, I feel like doing this, so yeah.
Okay, you guys, yeah. I can't stop thinking about if this is generational wealth now. Like, the amount that he spent, that he stole, I wonder if that money was generationally passed down and his, what would probably be like great, 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 great grandchildren at this point, something like that, are like still using the money that he basically stole. Or if someone found him and took it.
I mean,
well, when did, because if we know this now, at some point, I mean, long after he was dead,
I bet we could look it up.
Somebody must have figured out, like, hey, wait a minute.
I know, but he stole from so many different people. How do you even know how to divvy that back up?
Oh, yeah, I don't think you would divvy it back up. I think it would, because I know the law so well in other countries, I feel like it wouldn't necessarily be divvied back up to return to people. I feel like just the government would probably just take it.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
In all of my research, about him having kids. So that whole thing could be debunked just on him not having any children. But
I feel like kids would ruin his plan. Ruin his jam.
He had two
vibes going for. Yeah, both who died.
I don't know.
I mean, listen.
There were a lot of diseases.
Oh, I know. People died from so many things. I'm sure it wasn't. But you know what I mean? When you have someone who clearly doesn't seem to care about people or their lives. Right. I don't know, man.
Katie, why did people fall for this? Like, I'm always interested in hearing why people fall for any scam, though I've maybe fallen for one or two myself.
The S word.
The S word.
Careful. Careful, Courtney. Okay. For this one, this was kind of a tough one to figure out what angle to come at it with. One, mm-hmm. because this happened a long time ago. Although we know that human behavior really hasn't changed that much. if at all. And but it's still, you know, it was a little I was trying to figure out what area. I mean, based off of other research and stories that we've looked at, some we've covered so far in the podcast, some a lot we haven't yet. You know, it's not surprising at all that this ended up working, to me at least, because just off the bat, when I'm listening to this story, one, time period definitely played into his favor because people weren't able to verify information nearly at all the same way that we can do now. And he really, I mean, this guy's really smart because he went above and beyond to create this story, this narrative, but also writing a book under a different name. That's a lot of effort to create a book about a fake country and add all of this information. And for people, we tend to just assume that, okay, well, most of the time when someone brings you a book, it's legitimate. I've never come across a fake book before. Could be a thought that someone has. So even going there that someone wrote this and it's not true, it was just made up to make money from people, that would probably be a really hard concept to accept. And just looking at McGregor himself, he really has a lot of the characteristics that we've come across with successful, I don't want to say scammers, schemers, I don't know. That's almost the same thing.
Con artists.
Thank you, Courtney.
Fraudsters. A con man, a true con man.
Yes, a con man. He was an authority figure, or could be seen as one, because he was in the military. And from the stories he tells, I'm this valiant fighter. I've been knighted. And smooth talker, obviously. Mm-hmm. Very intelligent. Charismatic. So already, it's probably pretty easy to believe him. He's probably didn't have a hard time with that. And it would make sense why he would continue to lie. Because he can. Because no one... And who knows? We're getting a bird's eye view of this story. It could be that there were people who suspected him. We don't know. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, not enough did. And so what I wanted to do for this one is I was trying to think about what was the hook, you know, because, okay, there was this book that he presented that had all of this information, but he didn't have pictures of the place. He didn't have another person with him saying, yes, I too have lived there. It's just his word and that's it. That's all they have to go on. All right. So when I started the research for Psychology of Storytelling, as you can imagine, there's a lot because this is something that's been studied for so long because storytelling has been part of human beings since the beginning, since we had language or a way to communicate and share information and stories. And that came across, you know, looking at that, there was one thing that kept popping up. And it's called narrative transportation or narrative transport. And this is a concept where a person is placed into and immersed in the world of a story or a narrative. It also implies that once a person is lost in the story, so to speak, obviously, then not only do their attitudes reflect that story, but their intentions may do so as well. And with narrative transportation, there are several aspects, so several things that are happening. So you, when say you're someone who is immersed in a story, you're completely captivated, you're creating a mental imagery surrounding the story. So if someone's talking about giving you lots of detail, plus if you also had a book that was telling you all about the climate, all about the place, you can really start to get that image going. The second is losing awareness of one's surroundings. Not sure how particularly relevant for this one, but still keep that in mind. And an emotional reaction to the narrative. To me, the first two really hit home for this because for someone to really want to give up their life, and it's not at all the same thing anymore where you're hopping on a flight for 12 hours. Nope, you're giving up everything. So long, family, and I'm sailing across the ocean to a place I've never actually seen before. So he had to find a way to make a place feel familiar from thousands of miles away and with very little information. And through this research, there's also something else that popped up that I think is a big piece of this. And I already mentioned the word, it's familiarity. So if something feels familiar, obviously we tend to have a more positive reaction to it. And so in one study I looked at, and we'll include the links for people in the show notes if you would also like to do a dive in yourself. So a researcher found that familiarity is tied to deeper states of that narrative transport. So if you are, and this makes sense, you know, if you're thinking about it, if you are listening to a story and you're connecting, you start to make connections with the characters, or you see yourself in a character, or the character reminds you of a loved one or someone you know, or the story reminds you of your own, or it takes place in your childhood, or there's so many different things that hit on that, oh, familiar, and it feels good. And we get, and also our brains really, really love storytelling. I mean, it's part of, you can, again, please go out, do some research, but storytelling, reading to kids, that is a huge piece of their neurological development. So this is a huge key to, I think, human behavior, because it's so integrated and so important for us to be, well, I mean, one could argue this definition, well-functioning human beings. So that's, you know, not to bemoan or go on and on. That's what I'm thinking could have happened. And it's things that still happen today. Well, someone had
it right after colonization in America started as well. So there was also this like
familiarity of going across and building a new life, new countries popping up. So this isn't weird.
Absolutely.
It's not a strange thing to be happening at all. So again, it's that familiarity concept. If this seems normal, and this is, and also if you, I'm sure they had friends who were deciding to go together.
Right.
And would hear maybe
or
not,
entire families, like generations.
Yes, generations. And I mean, I'm sure McGregor, yes, he was kind of synonymous with that place because he was the one going to the banks. Obviously, he wasn't wanting more than himself dealing with the logistics, because he had to keep close to his chest that it's all fake. So I don't know. Anyway, I just think that it would be really hard not to fall for this. Honestly.
Yeah, certainly during the time. The idea of a bigger, of like the grass being greener is.
Yeah, better
is
opportunity.
Always, exactly. It's always, that's human nature, is to want bigger, better.
Yeah.
It, and so, yeah, I probably, honestly, if I was in the 1800s, I would have fallen for this.
I mean, I'm not a particularly an adventurous person. Courtney, I know you are. So you, yeah, you probably would. And I'd probably be your friend saying, have a great time.
And I would have been
safe.
The first to die of malaria. So I seriously, when I get sick, like I get hit hard. So that's how you know I would have been.
You probably wouldn't have survived on Mosquito Island or whatever it's called.
No, I also am like very, very certain that I would be the first one to die in a scary movie.
Why?
I've always felt like
that. Wait a
minute.
We
don't
need to
have. Okay, I just don't have the survivor skills. Like, we can go into that in a different podcast, or never is fine also. But I've always felt like that. So I feel like in this case, if I had gone overseas, I probably would have been one of the first. Or honestly, I don't love rain either. So I probably would have just like buried myself in the sand after rain.
I'm like, I'll bury myself alive. End it now.
Oh my gosh. But I'm curious, Ezra, as to what current scheme or con you are connecting this with.
So it's funny, because I went into this episode thinking that what I'd talk about is how there really isn't a parallel. And in order to find something similar, we'd have to kind of open things up and look at the big picture, which we can still do. But as you were telling the story, I kept thinking, like, well, this actually does sound like a scam that we see a lot. And those are apartment scams or rental scams. So,
yes.
You know, for people who aren't familiar with these, they're really common. It's if you're looking to rent an apartment or maybe a vacation property and you turn to the internet, which is probably now like how 99.9% of us would do it. A lot of the listings that you'll find, it's such a black hole. Oh yeah, you might not even be in the market.
It really
you guys
is.
Ever just browsed Zillow and looked at
all
the
time every day?
Oh wait, actually, on that topic, let me see if I can find it. Shoot,
perusing Zillow is literally one of my favorite pastimes.
How do I?
It's another one of KZ's passions.
It's called like Zillow Gone Wild or one of those other websites Gone Wild.
Oh,
it's
gosh.
A Twitter feed and they just post like the weirdest properties.
Oh, I'm looking into that later.
It's awesome. I just discovered it the
Katie
other day.
Katie doesn't do social media, but you bet your bottom dollar she's going to get on Twitter today.
You can find me on LinkedIn.
It's such a black
hole.
So okay anyway.
Apartment scams.
Well, so Zillow and any websites that like list properties, actually, I mean, obviously those are good for people and it makes it easier to buy stuff. But the fact that things are buy stuff to rent properties or buy a house, anyway, the fact that everything now is online does make it a little bit easier for con artists to get away with things because you can, you know, look at a property that's available and info about it, pictures of the interior are kind of there to grab. So what this leads to is a situation where in addition to all the legitimate listings, scammers can basically make fake listings to try and draw people in. So you might think you are putting down a deposit or submitting an application for a new apartment. Turns out the person just ripped the photos from the internet. They're going to take your money and run. The same thing happens with vacation properties. But really where I see a connection here is that they're exploiting distance or lack of familiarity with basically different places. So one of the biggest groups of victims for these scams are – well, I guess it's pretty self-explanatory for vacation rentals. It's tourists who are looking to go somewhere that is new to them. But when it comes to renting apartments, we see it a lot in these, you know, big hub cities like Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, and actually Denver and Boise are both up there as well. But people who are looking to move places and don't necessarily have the opportunity to go and visit in person. That creates an opportunity for a lot of exploitation and misinformation. So, you know, people lose a lot of money to those scams. I think BBB did a study in 2019 and they found that I think the median loss was somewhere in the mid hundreds, like I think $400 or $500, but one in three people lost over $1,000. So, you know, it's taking a lot of money because these are big moves. Just like sailing across the world to start a new life is a big move. You put a lot of eggs in that basket. You know, moving across the country is also something that people are willing to put a lot of resources towards. But anyway, you know, I see those scams as being similar because there's somebody who is looking for an opportunity somewhere far away and somebody else who swoops in and is like, I'm gonna pretend that I am, you know, somebody who's embedded in like the rental market in this city. You don't know what you're talking about, but I do. I've been here forever and man, have I got the apartment for you. And I think there's a strong connection between those two things. But the other, you know, area that I was going to talk about, area of fraud, is just this idea that if somebody's trying to sell you something that you know nothing about and have very few ways to verify, that's just a really tough situation to be in. And I don't know that I have a perfect set of tips for how to avoid it. But, you know, if somebody's trying to sell you property on the moon, there are very few things that you can do short of visiting that property to know that you're getting what you're paying for. Luckily, you know, now we have, with technology, you know, we have a more organized society where I'm sure there would be stops and I'm sure that your purchase would be insured. But, you know, one thing that comes to mind is kind of the explosion of crypto trading right now, cryptocurrency.
Oh.
And that's not something I'm certainly not going to tell people not to invest. Like, I've invested a bit in crypto. Like, it's not something that you should never do. But keep in mind, there are a lot of people who feign expertise because it's a topic that is new to a lot of people. It's uncharted territory. And you don't always know what you're getting into or who to believe. And I mean, there are certain facets of that space where realistically, even the so-called experts don't know what's going to happen or don't know what the best move is. But it's really hard to discern that if you are a consumer coming into this new space with no background knowledge and without even knowing who to go to find trustworthy information. So again, there's no if you find yourself in a situation like that, there's no magic pill that's going to give you, you know, at a certain point with some of these opportunities, I just don't have a perfect tip because it's not always possible to get all the information. So you want to turn to things like, well, what authorities are there on this matter? Like, is there, if you're a European, is there like an official charter that you can find? Probably not. But could you try, or can you make a purchase that's insured somehow? Do you have a backup plan to get back to Europe from South America if you get there and it's not what you think it is?
On the internet, there's reverse image searching now. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of resources where people can like flag content if they know that it's fake. Like if I were to go online and look up rental properties and see my house and my address listed online, you bet I'll flag it. I'm living here, guys. But there's definitely a lot. There's almost too many tips, if that makes sense.
Mm. Part of me, though, feels like because we can give as many tips as we will give as many tips as possible. And at BBB, we're continually finding new resources, finding new ways to fill those gaps, to give people that information. But not unlike the people who took that journey, we still have a lot of things in today's culture and society that is a calculated risk. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's not necessarily about having all of the information and making a perfectly informed decision. That rarely happens in life. But wanting to minimize that calculated risk as best you can, and additional digging, additional resources, talking to friends, and not being afraid to listen to your gut. Because a lot of times people will say afterwards, again, hindsight 2020, I had a bad feeling about this, or I wasn't quite sure. And so even though that's not necessarily like, oh, hot tip, everybody, trust your gut, it is something, though, that is important to remember that we kind of have a built-in checker. It's not perfect, obviously. Yeah. I just also just wanted to let people know that the goal is, of course, to give you as much resources. But there is just going to be a calculated risk with certain things, especially if you're moving across the country, if you're moving to another country even. Mm-hmm. Just doing as much research as possible. Like Courtney said, you can reverse image search. Were any of these pictures the apartment taken from another place and, put onto that profile, maybe?
A friend of mine was looking to move and actually yesterday came across an online listing that seemed too good to be true and asked me to look it up. And we were able to do exactly what you said, actually. We reverse image searched the photos from the Craigslist posting and it matched can't believe I didn't think of this example before because this is literally yesterday. It matched like the posting.
It's been a long week,
guys. It may
have
been Zillow, one of those sites for a house that was for sale, and she was able to contact the real estate agent listed on for that house for sale and ask, is this house actually, I came across a rental advertisement on Craigslist. Are you actually offering to rent this house? And the guy was like, no, it's for sale. And then he tried to sell her the house. But You know, the point
the
is
good
sometimes
salesman.
It does just start with going with your gut.
And yeah, because your friend reached out to you. And, you know, I know we've been talking for a bit, and I don't know if this is where we kind of wanted to wrap up a bit. Just, yeah, going back to how BBB can provide support and assistance for individuals, or even if you don't feel like coming, you know, calling BBB, you can always visit our website, www.bbb.org. And you can also talk to your friends, family. A lot of times, the reason these schemes work out, not this one particularly, because a whole bunch of people were involved, but we'll later touch on scams, so, S-word, schemes, cons, that really the reason they worked is they were anticipating the person not telling anyone and being mm-hmm. isolated. So again, mm-hmm. just remember, reach out to your peeps.
And on that note, resources. I'm going to drop a plug for BBB. I guess I'm going to have to say the S word because it's part of this program's name. But we have an online program called Scam Tracker. You can get there by going to bbb.org/scamtracker or just Googling the word Scam Tracker and it should come up. But as a consumer, if you think you've been defrauded or you've encountered something sketchy, you can report
it. Or bamboozled.
It. Yeah, if you think you've been bamboozled.
Especially bamboozled.
I love that word.
You can describe the bamboozling and how much money they tried to bamboozle
and who bamboozled
you out of.
The bamboozlement.
And you can also search for other instances of bamboozling that people have reported if you're unsure about an opportunity you're being faced with. So again, that's bbb.org/scamtracker.
Thank
Should
you
we rename the podcast?
I was just thinking about that. I was just
Welcome
thinking
to Bamboozled
that.
And Psyched.
Oh, it's such a great word. We should really have named is. This Bamboozled, but it didn't really talk about the psych part. Anyway, BBB Bamboozled. Oh, dang it. That's a missed opportunity. That's a missed opportunity right there.
Can we rebrand it? Is it too late?
It's too late.
Man. Yeah.
It's too late. Sorry, guys. This was a year in the making. Anyway. Thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for more episodes about the most successful cons in history, why they worked, how they're still working, and what you can do to stay safe from them. Until next time.